It's a great time to save big on everything for your next project at Menards. Get free estimates fast on new energy-efficient windows from Jeld-Wen. Choose from vinyl or wood windows and customize the perfect size and unique features for your home. Save big on all Jeld-Wen windows today. View our entire selection of Jeld-Wen windows on Menards.com. Plus, the weekly flyer for other great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Welcome back in, everybody, a Wednesday edition of Birds 365, joined now by good friend of the program, Mike Gill from 97.3 ESPN. Mike, welcome to the show, man, after a big NFL draft.
It was a crazy weekend. I just made, I think Howie made another trade.
He made eight. There was a thought, Tom Pelissero screwed up. There was a late trade, so people thought they set a record with nine or... for the first time since 1990. Maybe the most impressive part of it, Mike, was the fact that along with the haul they got, you know, they got three future picks, a third, a fourth, and a fifth next year. You and I talk about it all the time, how he's playing chess with a lot of these other general managers, but you know, it's because of his experience, two things, and the leash he has. Yeah. And he's allowed to do things other guys can't do.
Well, I will say, for the record, even when Howie was the most hated man in the city, and there was a time where he was number one, wasn't even a number two. He was number one and two, and I was not on that list. I have always thought that this guy has done a tremendous job. The draft thing, I don't judge you based on are you hitting or missing at a high rate, because nobody is. The draft is the best are like 54 and the worst is like 48. I mean, the difference in there is very small on hit rate there. It's what else are you doing? How are you studying the board? When he makes the trade for Cooper DeJean, he goes up to 40 and then there's a run of corners right behind it. So he set that pace. It's like a horse race there. And he set the pace of here goes a corner and everybody starts to take the corners. So the times where you're like thinking, all right, what are they going to do here? I tried to leave the house on like four separate occasions. I kept telling my girlfriend, all right, here we go. They're drafting here and then we can leave. And then he makes another trade. I said, well, all right, there's going to be three more and then another one. And you're thinking, okay, well, at the end of the day, you know, this is like the COVID year. So the talent in this draft, these guys were like the freshmen in the COVID, and he understood the draft talent pool is going to be deeper next year. So let me bulk up on the picks next year. This is not the draft that I need four fifth-round picks. So I thought it was awesome the way he just kept flipping and moving and then getting something in return to add something next year. It was just, as you mentioned, they're playing chess and everybody else is playing checkers. And it's again why teams keep plucking people from the Eagles front office that you never heard of, because they're trying to find out how are they constantly running laps around us on this weekend.
Yeah. And you talk about the process, and I think an underrated part of this draft, and you just briefly mentioned it there, not only did they get the players, they got three more picks for next year, which Howie will probably move to shake and bake and move up or down, get a player he wants. So pretty amazing stuff. But
or he's in a draft that he likes better. You know, that's right. The one thing. Like, we don't understand this process a lot of times as fans watching the draft. You're acting like you saw the players that are being drafted this weekend. Oh, I like this guy. Well, you've never seen that guy play. You just like what you're hearing about him. They're studying up on next year's crop in the middle of this one to say there's players we're going to like next year more than players we like now in this year's draft. So you might be piling up to say, as you said, Xander, make more moves, or there just might be more guys that they want to take in next year's draft. And we talk a lot about this on our show. We do the Football at Four every day, and Adam Kaplan comes on and always mentions, you know, the draft is not for this year. It's not for today. It's not for now. This is for long term. You don't draft for 2024. You're drafting for the length of your organization. That's why people get mad in the third round. Who's Jalix Hunt? Why are you taking this guy? They're not specifically taking him for 2024. They have Josh Sweat. They've got Bryce Huff. They have Brandon Graham here still. So you draft a guy that you might want to develop for when Graham leaves. So maybe he's a guy for 2025. So the draft is just it's an amazing weekend, but it is more than just helping your team out in 2024.
Yeah, and especially at the top of the draft, people don't want to hear that.
It's hard to swallow because you get so excited for it, John. You're like, it's a football event that you paralysis by analysis lead up to, and the fruits of the labor, if it's not being paid off immediately, you're disappointed. And that's the challenge of, like, you know,
there's so many people that turn the page on Nolan Smith. It's astonishing to me. Like, oh, he's not relevant anymore. And maybe that's the case, but the Eagles certainly don't.
Well, you know, John, I mean, there was a time, I'm 47 years old, when I was growing up and you drafted a wide receiver, it was a fait accompli that he wasn't giving you anything until year three, right? You get the third year wide receivers. These are the new guys. It was like you couldn't expect anything from a receiver for 3 years. Now, you know, if the guy doesn't have 1,000 yards in his first year, he's a bust. Yeah. You don't want him anymore. Same with pass rushers. If they don't get double-digit sacks, it's like they have to come on and make an immediate impact. And if they don't, people are ready to move on. That's just the world we live in, especially.
Well, that's college football. They grow receivers on trees now. I mean, they're all over the place. That's all because that's all they do. Whereas other positions, and that's why, you know, we talk about, I'm with you when it comes to draft picks, and I grade the decision making more than the draft picks because the Cooper DeJean is a perfect example. You're right, Howie hit that, man. He knew Green Bay was going to take him at 41, and to indicate that, Green Bay immediately traded down to about 45, 46. I forget the exact number, and it went cornerback, 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 cornerback. Four consecutive cornerbacks. And then Green Bay took, there was one, I think Jackson Powers Johnson went, and then it was Green Bay and Edgerrin Cooper. Now, the Eagles need a linebacker, and Edgerrin Cooper might be better than Cooper DeJean from a hit perspective. He might be a better player. That's possible, but you can't criticize the decision.
I'm interested in the decision real quick, John, that they targeted that player. That tells you a lot. We talked about it last week about, you know, if they take him, does that mean they have a plan for him? They didn't only take him. They acknowledged that they may have lost the trade value-wise, points-wise, to go get him. That says they have a specific yearning.
And by the way, I do know the Eagles scouted Cooper DeJean because we've been talking about it, the versatility. And there are teams that said, well, he might move to safety. He might play the slot. They scouted him as an outside cornerback. That's what they scouted him as. Okay. Now, you give him to the coaches at that point, and it becomes their decision. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't mean things can't change out of necessity or things like that when the coaches get him, which will start this weekend at rookie minicamp. But they scouted him as an outside cornerback.
Now that would be interesting. You know, he was kind of like, what do they call him? Like a Leo, I think was his term at
cash,
Iowa.
The cash position.
Yeah, it was like a Leo slash cash all over the place. Like, you know, you look at how Jim Schwartz used Malcolm Jenkins, and he was playing up on the line, and he was here. He played him in the slot. He played him at safety. I mean, he was all over the place. Does Vic Fangio, you know, when we had Colin Thompson on last week, and he said, there's only going to be one voice in that room. That's what's going to happen that's different here. And is that one voice in that room saying, I need that kid. I have plans for him. Go get him. You make a trade up to 40, somebody had a pretty strong idea on how to use that kid.
Yeah, Mike, we talk a lot about the decision makings. Me and John talked about the Cooper decision to go up to 40. Obviously, a perfect read of the board if that's the player you wanted. What was your opinion on the third round pick? There's a lot of discussion on whether that was a reach, a developmental type of player in the third round in Jalix Hunt. What'd you think of the Jalix Hunt pick in round three?
Well, obviously, you know, nobody knows anything about the kid. I mean, you're coming from playing safety in the Ivy League or what's called the
Patriots? You're at Cornell. No, Cornell.
Oh, he's at Cornell.
He's a smart guy.
Why did I think – yeah. So he's going from there in the Ivy League to go into Houston. What was it? It was Houston Baptist.
Yeah. It was Houston Baptist. It's Houston Christian.
Christian now. Yeah. Obviously, like, we're all like, okay, is this one of those Howie trying to outsmart group? And the other thing that's interesting about it is you always see that type of decision and then think, well, was somebody else going to take this guy in that range? Could you have not got him a little bit later in the draft? Howie makes the comment, well, I wish DJ did put the thing up on the board so that everybody knew. So obviously, this was a kid that people inside the draft world knew. I mean, Andrew DiCecco had talked about him on my show a few times. Yeah. So he knew, guys like that knew about
him. And we had Ian Cummings on yesterday who does tremendous draft work. He had him ranked 86th on the big board. So you're right. People inside the know definitely like the player.
Yeah. And, you know, like I said, you're not drafting for 2024 all the time. So you see a guy that has just an amazing raw ability. Now, we talked about Monday, Jeff Kerr was on my show, and you know, we mentioned the Davion Taylor pick where they had this raw kid with not a lot of experience. Now, this kid has more experience than Davion did, who had a wild story of, you know, he couldn't play Friday nights and stuff like that. So he had very limited experience, but he had a lot of ability that they liked. And sometimes in the third round, you're willing to take the chance on getting that ability. But in this instance, you know, the Eagles have Brandon Graham here for one more year. They have Nolan Smith. They've got pass rushers, so maybe they look at a guy like this and say, hey, we have a chance to kind of work with this guy and see if we can get something from him in 2025, 2026. That's the problem, though, with the fans. They want something now. I'm intrigued to see what this kid can give you, not this year, down the road.
Yeah, and just to follow up real quick, the one problem I would have, we talked to Tommy Lawler a lot about this yesterday. It's a Vic Fangio-esque pick. Vic likes to drop his edge rushers into coverage. He's a former safety, Jalix Hunt, so he can do that. But we got four sets of defensive coordinators in 5 years. Like, if Vic is gone, is the new coaching staff all of a sudden not love the style of player?
I know, John.
They went for that reason. I don't love it for that reason.
Yeah, John, you mentioned this a bunch last week, you know, that, you know, somebody was telling you that, like, hey, if the coach is gone. But Vic Fangio seems like he could be the kind of guy that a new coach might stick with. You know,
hey, yeah, that's true. But it is true. I mean, it's similar. And Jeffrey Lurie might even say, like, Stout. I mean, look, Eagles coaches since Chip Kelly, they come in and they say, well, Stout's going to be here. So don't worry about offensive line. So that's a decree. He could eventually do that with Vic Fangio. He's got that kind of reputation. But as the GM that I was talking to made that comment, the reality is when you're talking about coordinators, you're probably going to give that, and I'm talking about offensive, defensive coordinators, because Stout's the run game coordinator, but you get my point with these titles. When you're talking about legitimate coordinators on both sides of the football, generally you want your head coach to have a say in that. Not always. Doug Peterson was given Jim Schwartz.
Right.
And it can go that way, and eventually they developed a good relationship. The Eagles actually were going to bring in Jonathan Gannon before they hired Nick Sirianni. They hate when I bring that up, but that's the truth. But they were friends, Nick Sirianni. They worked on the same staff, so it kind of worked out, but it was a coincidence. So it can work the other way, but his point, I think, was a salient one in that, you know, if you're going to fire a head coach, and let's face it, if the Eagles don't reach expectations, they're going to fire a head coach, then he's probably going to want a different coordinator immediately. And all that work, if you're just drafting people for Vic Fangio on the defensive side, may be up in smoke. I don't think the Eagles are doing it. I think they value the input. I think it's meaningful, and Howie always says, if you're drafting players your coaches don't want, you're not going to be very good.
Yeah.
So it's a delicate balance, but I think the people that think Bick's stepping into the room and saying, Howie, take this guy, that is completely untrue. This is Howie Roseman's roster.
Right. Well, and I'm sure everybody, what did Howie say? You know, I think this is more of a day three thing. You know, hey, everybody give me your A plus guy, your guy. Yeah, yeah. Fight
the
for
passion
your
meeting.
Guy.
The passion
right. Give me your guy, which I like, by the way. Get up in the front of the room and make a plea for the guy you want. Sell me on somebody because, you know, we know day three is the scouts day. This is, hey, I've been crisscrossing across the country, and I'm looking at all these guys that you've never seen, so I'm going to make my plea. Hunt would probably be in that plea. I mean, who, you know, you probably had to have some scout see him and say, man, there's a guy we need to take a look at. And you start to take a look at him, and then, you know, everybody gets together. We think we could do something with this kid. Look at his traits. Look what he's doing. Look at his numbers. Yeah, I like the way we can use him. So in the third round, sometimes I think we have this thought of, you got to get someone who can play. You got to get someone who can play now. And I don't think the teams think the same way that most of the fans do. We, for some reason, I don't know what happened where the third round became a round of this guy has to start and play right away, right? You know, it was always like, hey, if you get something in the third, fourth, fifth round, middle rounds, you're kind of lucky here. But I think Hunt being such an ultra developmental type of player, you feel those guys are more in that fifth to seventh range rather than the third.
Yeah, speaking of the Jalix Hunt, ironically, you were mentioning some of those names that people don't know in the Eagles front office. That was Brandon Hunt. He was the one who, director of scouting, was responsible for Jalix Hunt. Now, it always starts with the area scouts, and then it goes up the board. It goes up the organization. But yeah, the Eagles weren't the only ones who knew about Jalix Hunt, even though Howie kind of made that joke about Daniel Jeremiah. He
Wait,
was going to go off.
He
the
doesn't
board.
Go off the media's. He doesn't go off the media's boards and just draft that way.
Yeah, and you know, the Eagles started at 120 on in the fourth round, and if they they traded a bunch of times, obviously.
Yeah,
but they were starting.
I'm a big fan of Will Shipley. I love that pick.
We'll get the Will, but as they go into day three, and you think about Hunt, he's probably not going to be there at 120. So you're probably going to have to go up. You're in that, if you want the player, take the player. Here's the only problem. Peyton Wilson went like four spots later.
Yeah.
And that might be the best linebacker in the draft.
So I get the trolls that come out that wanted Jeremiah Trotter. You know, his father was here. Everybody wants Trotter. And
well, they got like, him.
Well, no, he but I
need it, to. Yeah, I know. When, I know what you're
when
saying.
When Hunt got picked, it was, you know, there's Howie trying to be the smartest guy in the room, and Trotter was right there on the board for him. And I'm thinking three rounds later, I'm like, you got Trotter. Let the guy do his job, all right? But maybe they figured, like you mentioned, well, Wilson had a lot of medical issues and that.
Yes, but Xander knows and probably sick of it. Pittsburgh took him. Now that is relevant for two reasons. One, Andy Weidel is the assistant GM in Pittsburgh now, so he knows the Eagles. But even more importantly, the University of Pittsburgh, which I know you don't like, Mike, but UP at UPMC, that's like one of the go-to. Yeah, there's the West Virginia. That is one of the go-to sports doctor orthopedic places in the country. Dr. James Bradley's there. Dr. Joe Maroon's there. Best in the business.
Yep.
WWE sends sends all their talent there to get them cleared before they sign contracts. They're a big deal, and they cleared them. So if clearing them, it's meaningful to me. And that's a really good player.
You could say that maybe their doctors are a little bit more sophisticated then, that they were less worried. The guys maybe here are like, I don't know. I've never seen something like, I don't, you know, obviously, but no, that is a good point. Or, and look, how much different did they have Trotter next to Wilson? I mean, did they say it's a huge gap between talent, or did they think they were closer?
But hey, look, it's clear to me the Eagles didn't want the kid. I don't think it had anything to do with medical. So they might be right. And that for whatever reason, maybe you're right. Maybe Trotter's equal. They know they can get Trotter later in the process, and they think they have a similar type player. I'm not arguing with any of that, but you know how this works, Mike.
Sure.
If somebody goes right behind or very near behind a pick like Jalix Hunt fails and Peyton Williams becomes a big-time player, and by the way, Pittsburgh also has a history of using linebackers really well, that it becomes a story. Probably not fair. Not probably. It's definitely not fair because situations matter, schemes matter, all that stuff matters. But the reality is when you see that, it's like who brought up Mike Mamula the other day, Xander? I would say Mike Mamula, now first round pick.
That was Lawler, I think, yesterday.
Yeah, Lawler. Tommy's good with Eagles history. He was not a bad player. He was just overdrafted. And who was picked right behind him, essentially? Warren Sapp. And when that becomes the narrative, you remember early in Brandon Graham's career. Who was picked right behind him? Earl Thomas and Jason Pierre-Paul. And Eagles fans couldn't let it go until Brandon turned into Brandon.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, the situation that, you know, you're in this spot where the Eagles, I don't want to, Howie said, yeah, we have the perception that we don't value that position. It's not a position that they feel that they needed to take maybe at that. They took a third round line. I'm interested in this whole fifth situation, though. All right, so you take Jeremiah Trotter in the fifth round, right? It was the fifth round?
Yeah
so many round. Different picks. Fifth yeah. round there.
Which is tremendous value, by the way.
That's what I'm thinking. So you got Dean in the third round, which people thought was good value. He doesn't play a lot at all his first year. Now he gets thrown right into the starting job. The second year, he's hurt. Does Trotter have a chance to supplant Dean? Are they not happy with Dean? Or could there be a Dean and Trotter look? That seems like it would be two really small guys playing linebacker.
Nan and I talked about this yesterday a lot. I mean, he's got a path. Even despite being a fifth rounder, he does have a path to starting.
But is the path only to supplant Dean? I can't envision a linebacking core with Dean and Trotter playing together. I mean, those two guys are tiny.
I can. Yeah. That's the modern NFL. I mean,
wow.
You know, I think Cooper DeJean's going to get on the field as a big nickel guy. I think that's how he gets on the field. And you're only going to have one linebacker on the field in obvious passing situations. And you're going to have three safeties. Look at how Flores used Josh Metellus, who was a safety at Michigan. He played all 11 different positions last year.
Yeah.
They never had a second linebacker on the field. I mean, that's just the way everybody's now. It might look ugly at times when it
comes to White. Does Devin White get squeezed here?
Well, Devin White is.
Hey, you don't have to sell me on the Devin White.
Irrelevant. By the way, tell your story about the Tampa guy, Mike, that you invited on the show.
I think I said it last week when I was hosting, but so White signs. I have a couple people in Tampa that I know pretty well. And I texted two of them actually to come on and one responded with it. The other one said he wasn't available, but and he just said, look, I can't come on. I really don't have anything good to say. The player is just not any good. He doesn't listen. You know, he's constantly out of place. They only took off at the end of the year when they ended up benching him. And so basically, he didn't refuse to come on, but just declined because he didn't want to come on the radio.
He didn't want to rip the guy.
But he did say, listen, you can say this, just, you know, I don't want to come on the radio and say it. So I didn't have a lot of high expectations for Devin White when they signed him. I wasn't like, I was kind of more surprised. Like, and I laughed. I said, man, is this not the panderer right here? Go out and get a big name linebacker. So all these people who've been wanting a linebacker can be like, oh, he got a linebacker. Yeah, who can't play. But he's a big name. And John, you know, we've been doing these segments for years. Anytime a big name becomes available, your
big
tweet
name
is,
trap.
No.
Yeah. No, no, no.
Eagles fans love the big name trap.
The big name, man. The big name is always is the something.
So he'll always be the number five pick. And Tommy, who I love, Tommy Lawler, great guy, tremendous. He's acting like he's a big time player. And I'm like, Tommy, there is no evidence of this except for, and this is the greatest anomaly maybe in sports over the past decade or so. When he had that run to the Super Bowl, he was phenomenal.
I was going to say, he had that run. He had that run. And it's what we talked about last week, John. You do something that's memorable, and that's what you're remembered for. Andre Dillard played right tackle and was awful. He is now forever the worst lineman ever because he was awful on that game at right tackle. He moved to left tackle and became a serviceable player. He wasn't awful, but he's only remembered for right tackle, Monday Night Football, getting beaten like a drum. Devin White, by the casual fan that doesn't watch Tampa every single week, remembers him for that run, that he was a big part of that run. Not the 17-game sloth that he went through the last 2 years where he essentially didn't help out their defense very much at all. So, yeah, I'm interested to see what ends up happening. You know, you sign a guy that high profile. Is he – you know, we talked about this with Colin. And now his contract isn't
– $3.5 million, which tells you a lot. I mean, this is a guy – if you're the number five overall pick –
yeah.
And you're going on your second contract because they gave him his option year for some weird reason. And you get $3.5 million. That ain't good.
No. This is a situation like Colin Thompson was saying, like, hey, sometimes a guy has to play because of his salary. You know, the coach might not want to play him, but he's being nudged to say, no, you're not taking that guy off the field. I don't think Devin White's in this spot. So you sign this guy. Does he get any guarantee or, you know, being told, hey, you're going to come here and you're going to get this much playing time. I don't know. But in this instance, you have Dean. Now you draft Trotter, Devin White. You know, there's some other guys, Ben Van Zumeren. Is he guaranteed that he's going to play over all these guys or with somebody here? I think the Eagles' hope
is that Devin White is the starting linebacker next to Nakobe Dean. But as Howie himself says, hope is not a strategy. And I think, you know, you can't expect a fifth-round pick to start in the NFL ever. But I think there is a path to playing time. If he shows up in the summer and plays well and Devin doesn't play well, yeah, I think he could be on the field. And we don't even talk about Nakobe. I think Nakobe will be fine if he's healthy. But if you're being completely honest, he wasn't great in the five games he did play.
Quite disappointing.
Yeah. So they got some issues at linebacker still.
By the way, John, do you remember we were talking about the Eagles' third round reaches from small schools? Brian Smith from McNeese State.
Brian Smith. Yeah, that seems to be the wheelhouse. Now, people with Davion.
Another in the long line of third round guys from Nowhereville.
You mentioned Davion because Davion, he was a Seventh-day Adventist, so he wasn't allowed to play.
Is he in the league right now?
Wasn't allowed to play high school football. He's not. He was in the league last year with Chicago and I think Arizona for a little bit, Jonathan Gannon. I do not believe he signed with anybody yet.
No, he's a free agent right now.
He's only 25, but he's got a bunch of knee problems too. That's part of, I think people forget. Well, first of all, the seventh, he went to Colorado. He played two seasons at Colorado. I mean, which is not, they're getting better with Deion Sanders, by the way, what a shit show that's going to be next year when his kids come out in the draft. But anyway, he started like, you know, the whole season for two consecutive years at Colorado. So it's not like, I think people forget that. And then there was a very small portion of the 21 season. So Nick's first season, he took over the starting role and he actually looked pretty good. He was fast. He was physical. He had that. Remember the Slay, the city versus country fumble? The Slay was making out in Denver. He said, that's a country fumble. And everybody's looking at, what are you talking about? You just pick it up and go. Nobody's around you versus a city fumble when you got to get in the muck. Davion forced that fumble. He was showing some signs, and then he hurt his knee and he's out for the year, had surgery. I think that's completely, I don't know. I think people lose all, like, he never showed anything. He was terrible. He never played football. He played 2 years at Colorado, which, again, is not Alabama, but it's a hell of a lot better than Houston Christian. That's a high level of football.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, so I just wanted to bring that up about Davion. It's good,
Mike. I want to shift to day three. Anything stick out at you at day three? I know it's a depth day, and you talked a little bit about Will Shipley.
Yeah.
I thought they made some good value picks there. Honestly, there's some guys I think that could have a role on this team in the future, which is what you're looking for on day three. What'd you make of day three and the moves?
I said I love Shipley. I think he's a weapon. I don't know what he does. What position you classify him, but I think he's just all over the place. And the Eagles seemingly have been a team that gets crushed by that guy on the other side. There's just this guy that comes up with a play, and you're like, we don't have that guy. The guy who just does everything. Anything he adds, he gets these tough yards. He catches the ball out of the backfield. He does a little bit of this. He's in the return game. Shipley's one of those guys that just kind of always seem to make plays. Now, I know a lot of questions about catching the ball in the backfield. I know the Eagles think he can catch the ball a little bit better than maybe as advertised. I just look at him as now it'll be interesting to see what kind of complimentary he is to Barkley. You know, does he just randomly kind of get thrown into the mix? How do they use him? By the way, our friend Boston Scott signed with the Rams last night.
New York Giants, very, very happy. That's the best development of the offseason for the New York Giants.
Yes, exactly. I'm surprised the Giants didn't just sign him themselves. But is Shipley in the Boston Scott role where he's just so minimally used that, you know, we're having this conversation and looking back and saying, man, they never used that guy. But I really thought he was a productive guy in big spots at Clemson. Smith is another guy, interesting. The kid from Texas A&M, another little slot possibility there. And then on the flip side, you got Wilson, the receiver out of Florida State, who's completely the opposite. Just a big, I know some people have hinted at tight end. The Eagles are saying they're not using him there, but that ought to be an interesting, right? That ought to be an interesting lineup in training camp or rookie camp with Smith and Wilson standing next to each other, competing for the same spot there. And I also thought, you know, let's throw Becton into the mix here because they drafted two offensive linemen, but really late. They didn't target offensive line at all. Maybe they thought about it early in the draft, and then once they didn't get there, they went to the end. But then basically say, you know what? We didn't really get the line that we like. Let's bring in a guy who was a first-round pick, started 30-plus games in this league, and is only 25 years old.
He just turned 25. He's like,
yeah,
freshly 25. Yeah.
So I thought that was an addition to the draft class of getting a really young, talented offensive line. Mekhi Becton was a very good player at Louisville. Had some injury issues. He missed a whole year in 2022. I think he missed a whole year. He had some knee problems. It'll be interesting. Mosher was on my show Monday and hinted that they could look at him at guard. He's a big guard, though, like 6'7". Yeah. But that's an interesting addition to the back end of that draft there.
Yeah, no doubt. Day three. Yeah, that was the one thing about the whole draft, Mike. And it's at Mike Gill Show on X. Make sure you follow Mike there. 97.3 Sports Bash, ESPN South Jersey. Number one, drive time, always. Mike does a tremendous job there. And Howie admitted this, by the way. If you went into this draft, and I did the numbers, 9 offensive linemen, offensive tackle in the first round. That's the most, tied for the most since 1967. Then if you go to the second round, 5 more offensive linemen. Then if you go to the third round, 10 more offensive linemen. The biggest upset in sports was the Eagles going 0-for-24 on offensive linemen in this draft in the first 2 days. Howie thought there was no way that would happen. and that's how the board fell. So not everything went perfectly for the Eagles. But they went into this process wanting to get competition for Tyler Steen and get a potential successor to Lane Johnson at right tackle whenever Lane decides to hang it up. That's tough to do, and you're only going to get it at the top of the draft. They like J.C. Latham. They like the kid from Washington, but it didn't work out. They went in a different direction. That's what you have to do, GMs mm-hmm. with contingencies.
Do you think they had interest? Do you think they had interest in Fitano when Pittsburgh took him? Because yes. that was the one area yes. where
yeah, he got in their orbit. Yeah, he got in their orbit is how I described it.
What we talked about with Les and Martin last week was, you know, they weren't going to wait and they would jump over if they yeah. liked the guy. I was yeah. wondering when whoever picked in front of Pittsburgh was on the board. I can't remember, but at 20, I guess 20, would Philadelphia jump into the 20 spot if they wanted Fitano, thinking that Pittsburgh would take him there. And they ended up not
lost,
doing that.
Xander. Well,
hopefully am I hosting the show again?
Yeah.
Am I hosting again?
Maybe. So we'll power through. Hopefully he gets back. But with
but Fitano, that's the thing. Yeah. yeah. I thought they might jump over Pittsburgh to take Fitano if that's the guy they wanted, but they don't. And this is like one of these clear indications, John, that you had it right there, Mitchell or Terrion Arnold. They took the guy they specifically wanted.
Oh, yeah. There's no question.
Unless they couldn't get a trade to jump over Pittsburgh.
Yeah, there's no question they wanted Quinyon Mitchell over Terrion Arnold by definition. There yes. is a little bit of a question that if Fitano and Quinyon were there, they would right. have taken Fitano, in my opinion.
Right.
They would have taken Fitano.
Do you look at Becton at guard at all?
No. 6'7", 6'8". No. Yeah, well, I mean, what are we I doing mean, here?
Landon Dickerson's a pretty big
guy. Yeah, Landon's very big. And people, no. I he's never played right guard. I mean, and again, when you talk about getting relevant competition for Tyler Steen, you're not talking about getting some guy. You're trying, first of all, you're trying to reclimate him as a tackle, number one. And Jeff Stoutland thinks he could be that and thinks he could be a swing tackle. And then to throw guard on top of it, maybe down the line, but certainly not meaningful competition early. So I think Matt Hennessy becomes more important because there's a guy who was an ascending player in Atlanta, had some knee issues. All but yeah, don't be surprised if your week one starter at right guard is Matt Hennessy. And that's probably yeah. not where the Eagles wanted to be. So not everything went perfectly.
A lot of time.
Yes. Yes. But not everything went perfectly. At Mike Gill's show.
Mike, thanks for joining the show. Sorry, I dropped out there. My internet was going a little fuzzy. I guess we're all at the mercy of the internet. Mike, we appreciate you joining the show, man. Great draft breakdown. Everybody make sure you listen to him down the shore, 97.3 ESPN, and follow him on Twitter at Mike Gill Show. Thanks, Mike.
See you, everybody.
Thanks, bud.
Johnny Mac, I want to bring up one thing to you before we get to a break. And in hour number two, we have Brandon Lee Gowan from Bleeding Green Nation. So good stuff coming up in hour number two. We did get a super chat from our buddy James Carver. I want to thank him for the super chat. He throws a little chirp at you, Johnny Mac, for making a draft based on helmet argument. I think he's referring to the Davion Taylor at Colorado. Any rebuttal to James?
No, I wasn't drafting based on helmet. I was trying to point out to the people that say he never played because of his Seventh-day Adventist beliefs in high school, which is true. It didn't translate. He played two full seasons at Colorado. That's what I was trying to emphasize at the college level. So he had experience playing at a major conference at the college level. That's it. I wasn't, if you listen to me for 5 minutes, never scout the name, never scout the helmet. I just talked about it with CJ Stroud yesterday. For years in this league, you can't draft an Ohio State quarterback. Yeah, you can. CJ Stroud has nothing to do with any of the other ones. Can't draft a Southern Cal quarterback. That was a thing for years. Yeah, he can. Caleb Williams is the number one overall pick.
Hunt argument. James was talking about the Hunt argument, but
no,
to your yeah. point, I mean, I've been talking to you all since the draft. That was never
no.
that was never an issue for you where no. he went to school.
no. And there's tons of, I covered John Randall, went to Texas A&I. He's in the Hall of Fame. Look him up. You can find good players everywhere. And the NFL generally does a good job and finds out, and he'll get his opportunity. He was a third round pick in the NFL, even though he played at Houston Christian. So, yeah, that's never been my argument.
All right, we'll move into hour number two. Coming up after the break, me and Johnny Mack will talk a little bit about the whole NFL. John, I didn't have a chance to talk to John specifically about what he thought about what some of the teams did in the NFL draft. And then we'll hit a little bit on the NFC East on the tail end. And then in the 920 spot, we'll have Brandon Lee Gowton from Bleeding Green Nation, great contributor to the program. And he does great work over at Bleeding Green. So make sure you read him. And I want to remind all of our listeners who we appreciate, James, we appreciate all you, Crawley, we appreciate it. If you can like the show, help us grow the show. It will show this show. It will make this show reach more Eagles fans. So that's the best way you can help us grow as the show and as a network. So we appreciate that. And we'll see you on the other side of the break. We'll be back in 3 minutes.